So Billy ended the local hour by sort of whimpering, I may have been wrong about Charles Johnson. And then Chris said something that made me think, and I think this might actually be a game that even gets Roy involved. Chris then said nobody could ground into a double play like Charles Johnson.
So true.
So, I mean, and it got me to thinking, who are guys who, if they hit the ball in the infield, hard, slow, baseball history, in the hole, it didn't matter. It was going to be a double play. I'm really asking you, who are the slowest guys in Major League
history? It's
going to
be all catchers, right?
I don't know if it's all catches, but there's no one slower in the history of Major League Baseball than CJ. CJ could hit a screaming ground ball to shortstop. Like, he could hit a slow one, a fast one, deep in the hole, not deep in the hole. CJ, I believe, never, ever beat out a double play in his life. I mean, that's
I think Benji Molina from the Giants would like a seat at this conversation. I'm going to text Tim Kirkchian, who the slowest player
The entire Molina family could be in this discussion. Stugatz got caught up in the air there and realized that if you hit a screaming ball to the shortstop, just about anybody is going to hit into a double play.
I feel like Yadi's fast for a catcher, right? Yadi can steal some bags, can he?
He's an athlete for a catcher. But I just think of the entire Molina family as if they hit it on the ground in the infield, everyone, Mama Molina.
I was going to say Mama and Sister Molina also.
you have all Molina slow?
All the Molinas.
I'm going to go with Charlie O'Brien with this one, Dan.
Wow, old school. Roy is going, now the other guys don't know who this is, but this is a backup catcher for the Mets and Braves who had a lot of curly hair. It's a fine choice, but not as good as Charles Johnson, I don't think. During the break, yes, Tony.
I've got a two pair here of Prince Fielder and Big Poppy, David Ortiz, two of the slowest guys in the league.
You reminded me by saying Charlie O'Brien of what Stugatz was muttering during the break, saying he hated Walt Michaels and he will never forgive Walt Michaels Walt Michaels, and Chris didn't know that name, and there's no reason for him to know that name, was coach for the Jets in the 80s, and is one of the reasons that Stugatz became a fan. Stugatz was spitting at the television because Adam Gase is saying that he's pissed off, and the Jets look, God almighty,
terrible. Stugatz,
I don't even know. Let me ask you guys this question. What's worse? First play of the game, just a normal sweep goes for 80 yards, or, put this on the poll, Guillermo, or third and 31, handoff near your own goal line, and it goes for 55 yards against your Jets. Which one made you curse at the television more?
I didn't see 7-0. My daughter took delight in calling me to alert me that the Jets were already down 7-0 a minute into the game.
A minute, 15 seconds into the game. Mostert made his way down the field at 23 miles per hour. It's the fastest anyone's run since they started tracking that stuff. So literally, that's about as fast as a human being can score a touchdown in a game.
Well, that's why I brought up Walt Michaels to you during the break. My daughter said, Daddy, why'd you do this to me? Like, she was glued to the TV. Home opener, 49ers, need the game. As always, it's week two, and it's a must-win game for the Jets. And so she was excited for the game. She goes, Daddy, why'd you do this to me? How? And I go, it's Walt Michaels' fault. It is Walt Michaels' fault. He was just good enough as a head coach to make the Jets just good enough in the early 80s that I was hooked and became a fan. And so now Rachel's just walking around cursing Walt Michaels. I haven't even heard of him. How about that?
It has to be that third down play, because they did that stereotypical third and a million draw play. Like, here, take it, get the hell out of here. And he just ran for 51. Like, there's nothing more demoralizing than that, Stugatz.
No, because you're right. It's a throwaway play that they somehow turned into a first down.
It's unbelievable. Again, though, I want to revisit the original.
Walt Michaels' fault.
I want to revisit the original point, which is, okay, since they started clocking the speed of human beings, no one has been faster. Like, he ran away from your secondary, and it was just the most civil. Like, it's a play as old as football. Just toss it to the right to your running back and watch him make a sweep. It should never go for 80 yards.
No,
it should never go for 80 yards, because There are layers of defense and linebackers and secondary that is supposed to prevent that from happening.
They're so frustrated. And that Gase is going to get fired. And listen, I become friendly with him, but I got to be honest. I was only friendly with him because he was the Jets head coach, and perhaps he could provide me with some access. But he's not going to last long here. I like him as a human being, but he's in big trouble. Sam Darnold has gotten worse since Adam Gase, the quarterback whisperer, has gotten there. And Ryan Tannehill's gotten better since Gase left them.
Well, you mentioned the skill position help that Josh Allen now has. You're skill guys.
We have no one.
Good God.
Nobody.
How is that possible? Like, how is Sam Darnold supposed to do anything with those skill guys?
And then you have his GM, Joe Douglas, who signs nothing but offensive linemen. I mean, that's all he signs the entire offseason. Guys you never heard of. And here's the problem. It is Joe Douglas's job to fire Adam Gase. And the only reason Joe Douglas has that job is because of Adam Gase. Adam Gase hired him. It's a complete disaster.
They got rid of their only Robbie Anderson, who was one of their athletic guys. They got rid of him. So yep. It's just interesting decisions. And I just realized something. Chris Forrester, the guy that did cocaine or a white substance as the Dolphins offensive line coach, now works for the San Francisco 49ers. So last night, that third and 31 play was his offensive line. I just felt like that's a funny, you know, Gase was his coach. He fired him, and that guy gets rehired with the Niners and gets that play that's going to end up getting Gase fired. What a weird, weird world we live in.
The Jets have four guys that they dressed at wide receiver, and two of them got hurt yesterday during the game. So that explains part of it. But do you realize, and Chris was asking during the break, he was wondering if a whole new legion of Jets fans were fooled by a couple of those Rex Ryan years and now will have the eternal curse of Jets fandom on them. But do you guys realize this is what I'm about to say is it would be funny if it didn't make me want to sob at the microphone. We have started every damn season around here with the Jets and the Dolphins feeling this way after two games. How long has it been since, and it used to be the Bills too. Now the Bills are better and they can't all start that way because they've got to play each other sometimes in the first couple of games. Right. But the Jets and Dolphins have started like this. It feels like, I don't know if it's actually true. The Dolphins might have won a game somewhere in here, but I can't. Am I wrong in saying I can't remember the last time the Dolphins started 10-0? Was it like Dave Wanstead's Sam Madison team? Like, when's the last time the Dolphins started 2-0 where they would get you excited the way the Bills fans are excited now or Seahawks fans are excited now where you know you have a good football team?
I feel like because 2-0 is not that, like, a team could stumble upon 2-0. So I want to say maybe in the last five or six years.
What I'm saying,
but they haven't had, right.
I feel like we've done this show after week two about the Jets and the Dolphins specifically where they're irrelevant since we were arguing whether you'd rather have Bills quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick or Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez.
I think you're right.
I mean,
Jets went to back-to-back AFC title games.
They did. The Jets have had some recent success. The Dolphins have, they haven't had much. So.
Not super recent. It was 2009, 2010. Felt like a lot sooner than
it
that.
It usually spaced out, you know, 30 years in between. That was only 10 years ago.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Enjoy it. Put it on the poll. Is having success in 2009 someone having recent success?
Yes. When you've had no success, that's it.
Yes or no? Because it really does feel like we have been talking the entire time this radio show has been on the air about how unbelievably shitty the AFC East always is. And it usually arrives, the scent, within two or three games where you know, oh, look, half the division, their season is over.
Am I reading this correctly? The Dolphins got off to a 3-0 start 2 years ago.
Is that right?
I think they beat the Titans, the Jets, and the Raiders with Tannehill as the quarterback in 2018, then lost to the Patriots 38-7.
I have an update from Tim Kirkjian. I reached out to Tim Kirkjian about the slowest players to ever play Major League Baseball. He first just hit me with a fun fact that Albert Pujols has 398 career ground into double plays. So that's pretty impressive. But I don't think that's in his top three, because then I said, give me your top three slowest players ever. So now I have three players, and I feel like I won this game because one of them is Benji Molina. And the next guy is Matt Wieters. So apparently Matt Wieters is extremely slow. And this next guy I've never heard of, so hopefully Dan and Stugatz can help me out. The third guy, Ron Hassey.
Ron Hassey, left-handed catcher.
Yes.
I don't think that any of those guys were slower than Charles Johnson. Chris, I know that one of your favorite things in the world is that you have the access to Tim Kirch and to ask him questions like this. But can you just text him? Dan is saying that you are a failure because you have egregiously forgotten Charles Johnson. And just see what his response is, or if you want me to do it, I'll do it if you don't feel comfortable.
I did mention Charles Johnson to him, like that was the basis for this conversation. So maybe he didn't give me back like Charles Johnson because I had already mentioned that. So that was a little biased.
Stugatz, 2015, the Jets started 2-0 against the Browns and Colts, and then they went 4 out of 5 beating the Dolphins in Washington. Also,
yeah,
10-win season, 2015, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Recent success. You're right.
It's so depressing.
I hate them.
Isn't it though? Yes. Like, I mean, how do
I hate the Dolphins. I don't know if you're a fan of them. It's annoying. We live down here. They're never good.
The reason though, Stugatz, the reason that I say I have this feeling that none of these teams have started 2-0 in this decade is specifically because every single time that I'm thinking to myself that the Dolphins are god awful, the Jets provide me solace on a Monday where I can, you know how long I've been making fun of you for your Jets fandom, and the Dolphins have been just as bad, but the Jets lose in ways that are even more like the Dolphins at least were respectable in the first two games of the season. The Jets extinguished all hope in these first two games where, you know, your team is putrid. Like, you know, it's not going to do anything. It's going to be constipated on offense all year, even though, you know, you got your team ownership still saying that Adam Gase is a brilliant mind.
Right. Well, he's not. And, you know, the Jets are -28 through two games. I think that's the worst in the NFL. It's them and the Houston Texans, which is funny. They're just, Dan, they're not a well-run organization. They never have been. They never will be. And I blame Walt Michaels.
I'm telling you, Stugatz.
I also blame Gastineau, Klecko, Salam. I blame the sack exchange. I blame Richard Todd for having beautiful wavy hair. Because I'm telling you, the Jets were just good enough and just exciting enough to lure in this 12-year-old kid from Long Island to go out to Shea Stadium and watch them every Sunday. They were just good enough and just exciting enough. I blame Lance Mell.
Who is
big turf if you issues those, Stugatz? The turf was a mess yesterday.
The turf was an absolute mess yesterday, yes.
Who is Salam?
Salam was one of the was part of the sack exchange. Marty Lyons, Gastineau, Salam, and Joe Klecko. I mean, they were just good enough, Dan. They were exciting. I mean,
that was a team. The teams that Stugatz is mentioning, we are longing for a time in the mud when A.J. Dewey was making interceptions because the Dolphins and Jets were playing in the AFC championship game.
They played in the 82, I think, AFC championship game. A.J. Dewey, 3 interceptions. I think that's the game where Don Shula cheated.
The Jets and the Dolphins, I guess that's where the rivalry comes from. Where did he cheat? How did he cheat?
I think he watered the field. He did something to mud that field, and he muddied up
it
the field.
It was raining. What are you talking about?
He made it
about?
A slow track. What the Jets were a fast team.
It was raining. What, Don Shula made it rain?
I don't know. I mean, Roy, I'm certain he knows what I'm talking about because he was laughing. He turned the sprinklers on all night or something.
He was laughing. The reason that Roy was laughing is because you desecrated the name of one of the most integrity-soaked men in the history of sports who also passed away recently. That's why Roy was laughing, because of how disgraceful it was what you did, where you simply called Don Shula a cheater because it rained.
Too soon?
Gobbler.
Got a handful of things that I want to get to. The agitated among you tend to take stuff like this seriously with your fandom. Mark Richt, the former University of Miami coach, publicly picked against Miami before the game against Louisville. We'll get to that in a second. Also want to get to LeBron being upset about finishing second in the MVP voting. But before we do that, because I can't think of a whole lot of things sillier, arguing on sports radio about whether someone should be first or second or third in the MVP voting.
But it's not me and you arguing it. It's LeBron.
I know, but people are then arguing on behalf of right. whether or not he's right. Well, and does he have a right to yes. be pissed off?
Right.
And it's, you know, Ramona Shelburne said publicly that she prefers a narrative-based MVP vote, and she voted. She was among the 15 who voted for LeBron James for MVP, or the 12 or whatever it was.
Hasn't he reached a point in his career where he's kind of above these minor, like, bickering things, right? Where he's like, well, I only got 16 points. And Giannis, who's won back-to-back MVPs, he's like, I don't even count him as MVPs unless I win a championship. And LeBron, who's about to win a championship or trying to win a championship, is saying like, oh, no, I should have been the MVP. Like, shouldn't he be above this at this point in his career?
I think he's trying to build up the resume. He's only got a few years left to kind of build it up with championships and with MVPs. I think that's what players are kind of defined by. Definitely defined by rings. It's certainly MVPs, I think, is the next thing, the all-time greats.
But no one's going to question whether or not he's an all-time great. Like, people think he's the greatest of all time, him and Jordan. Like, what is one more MVP really going to do in that discussion?
Who broke a glass?
What was that sound? Where did that sound come from? Is that a child at Roy or Chris's, or is that Billy's dog? What was that sound, Billy? Do you know?
That was a fork falling.
Oh.
My dogs had quite the morning.
The other things I wanted to talk to you about before we get to Colby Covington, because I think that that story is interesting, even though we don't have the sound for you right now. We're having some audio difficulties. I wanted to ask Chris and Stugat if they saw what happened with Danny Lee this weekend, trying to putt again and again. I think he six putted from 3 feet away. And I couldn't believe what I was watching. This is a professional golfer, but you guys don't have any idea what I'm talking about here. And I understand there's too much sports going on right now. So every time I'm asking somebody whether they saw something or not, the answer is always, I'm sorry, I had 5 screens up. I wasn't watching Danny Lee at that particular moment.
Why were you watching Danny
Lee? Well, because I thought it went viral. I would have thought you as a golfer would be someone who would think to himself, wow, that's a professional golfer, and what just happened to him is something that would happen to me. Yes, Chris?
Yeah, it was on the 18th hole. I saw it, and then he withdrew right after. I mean, it was rough. It looked like Greg Cody out there. Like I've never seen a pro have 6 putts from inside 4 feet. That was insane.
No, but we can relate to that. You and I, like the everyday golfer, can relate to that because we've all been there. Now, we won't count them on our scorecard, but we have all been there, right? We'll usually just pick it up after one or two and just put it in our pocket and walk away.
But to Dan's point, I've been there, but I don't know if I've been 6 putts within 4 feet. Like, I've, like, 4 putted or maybe 5 putted, but that 6 putt, like, that's legitimately bad. I mean, especially for a PGA golfer.
It absolutely went viral because as I was driving in, my wife has been watching Good Morning America and she texted me, oh my God, my heart is breaking for this golfer because they were, and this is early in Good Morning America.
Good
this is
Morning
like
America?
B-block.
Really? Good Morning America went to Dan, with all the sports going on, they went to Dan, poor Danny Lee.
Yeah, this is something you have to see. This is water cooler talk. Danny Lee's meltdown at the U.S. Open. Cynthia would not stop texting me about it. It's terrible to watch.
It's that third putt, Chris, where he just gives up. He misses the first two and then just slams the third one 10 feet past the hole and he just gives up.
And
That's my bad. I had my hand up, but go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I'm just saying, what's the equivalent of that in other sports? Like, give me something else in another sport that's the equivalent of that.
Nick Anderson.
That's what I thought of originally, but that's just missing a bunch of free
throws. But Mike, this is like Nick Anderson missing a layup 6 times.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps getting his own rebound, putting it back up, but keeps missing the layup.
Well, then Rick Ankiel, John Lester refusing to throw to first. I think baseball, randomly, there's so many parallels in terms of yips, baseball and golf, even though the sports are remarkably different. It's weird how the mental aspect affects those so much.
Actually, there was some European soccer play a couple weeks ago, Mike, where some guy had a cross and he had it like right in front of him at the far post. Like, it was the most insane sitter, that's what they call it in soccer when you miss an easy goal, a sitter. It was insane.
Chris, I would say, and Highly Questionable loves to air just soccer incompetence, and we have a ton of it, like just goalie after goalie, you know, keeper after keeper missing easy shots or just whiffing on a kick. I have never seen a soccer play as bad as the one that you are talking about, where the guy had the ball inches from the goal that had no goalie in it, and just sort of stumbled into the post, and then the ball went out of bounds. It was staggering. It is something that would not have happened to a toddler. And it is the single worst. It's the single worst thing I've ever seen on a soccer field, where a guy is just there. He's 10 yards from anyone else. He's got the ball right in front of him, and he just sort of falls down clumsily and into the post. I don't know how you sleep for weeks after that if you're a soccer player.
Well, the world's richest keeper right now, Chelsea, their keeper is going through some mental stuff. He kicked the ball directly to a Liverpool player. And Chelsea signed a new keeper, but they purposefully didn't put it out on Twitter because this keeper is so fragile. They didn't want the announcement out there in social media on the eve of a big game against Liverpool. And I shit you not, Chelsea got a red card because the defender didn't trust his keeper because it was a 1v1 situation, so he brought the guy down. And then he just kicked the ball directly to a Liverpool player.
Mike, have you ever seen a play as bad as the one that me and Chris
That was bad, but I didn't really recognize the uniform, so this stuff happens. I don't know. I'm not really watching the Turkish League. The Champions League semifinal with Pep Guardiola and Raheem Sterling's miss against Lyon right in front of the net, that's the worst I've ever seen. I want to go back
That was worse in terms of, like, the moment of it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was like this one, though, that we're talking about was just in terms of the science of it. Like, how did you physically miss this one?
I have no idea how that happened. I've watched it several times. The science of it. John Brinkus needs to work on this one. I want to go back to what Dan said on LeBron, because I was handling audio issues and I was screaming because no one could realize what LeBron was doing. LeBron, I mean, I'm an expert when it comes to LeBron. I don't know if you guys saw, he makes it a point to tweet about Joe Burrow while the Miami Heat are completing their comeback because he doesn't want anyone to think he's watching the Miami Heat. This whole narrative thing that he was talking about in the voting, I don't know if you guys caught, like, Brandon Ingram is good and I'm happy for him. I thought he deserved the award, but how could you not give it to Devontae Graham? You know what's happening there. You know exactly what's happening there. LeBron, the GM, shipped Brandon Ingram out for Anthony Davis. He doesn't want Ingram winning the most improved player. He wants Devontae Graham winning that because that makes the trade look worse. How can you guys fall for this? And it was all self-serving. He had a point, by the way, about 2012. He deserved the Defensive Player of the Year. Absolutely. He lost out to Marcus Gasol. And he's just saying, how do I lose out to a guy that didn't even finish first-team All-NBA? A great point, but it's all self-serving, guys. That's the LeBron thing. When he writes leader on his shorts, he's leading for him.
Now, I guess to Billy's point, isn't he above this? Isn't he past this? I mean, what is he doing?
In his defense, he doesn't get enough attention. People don't give him enough respect.
I know, Jesus.
He's the fight for his own, like, love. If he doesn't do it, Stugatz, who's going to give him credit and love and appreciation if he doesn't ask for it himself?
No, you're right. Stand corrected.
I have a question about the Emmys. Did anyone watch the Emmys?
No.
I watched some.
I'm not watching late night TV. I'm not watching any comedian stand up deliver anything where there's no fan reaction. It's sad. It makes me feel bad. That's sad.
So people were not at the awards, right? Like, people were at home, I guess, where they zoomed in. Is that how it was working out?
They had a handful of people there, though, that they would have come out to announce stuff. But most part, like, they had over 115 Zoom cameras. So it was like, well, the majority of it was on Zoom.
So did they send out, like, dummy trophies for people to hold? Or, like, did people, like, have a box and they opened the box and if there was an Emmy in it, they won?
They didn't physically hand the Emmys to anybody. Hmm.
Not that they were. I saw people in joking, like, hazmat suits. Like, I know that the Schitt's Creek crew was having their own party, like, socially distant, where they were all together. But I thought I saw them doing a joke with some guy in a hazmat suit bringing them their Emmy.
Yeah, Zendaya has an Emmy. Was she there, I guess?
The people I saw winning an Emmy were giving speeches into their cameras, but they weren't given anything. They weren't handed anything. The 10 minutes I saw. That Miss America won something. The Unorthodox won something.
Did Ozark win anything?
No.
One of the actresses, I think.
Are you guys like Stugatz, where all this stuff is so sad? It's so not normal. It's so weird that you don't even want to watch it because it's going to disorient you and remind you that nothing is normal outside?
It's the only thing that's working for me without fans is the thing that I thought was going to work the least.
Football. It's unbelievable.
Football works without fans? It's fine.
I can't believe that the football experience doesn't seem much different at all.
I the award show. You guys want to talk Emmys? Like, that feels different during all this. I'm the sports stuff. I've adjusted the golf, baseball, basketball. I've forgotten about fans. I'm like digesting all the sports. Maybe it's because the Miami sports all of a sudden are very like these games are important. So maybe I'm just invested, but I'm not feeling any of the stuff Stugatz is saying.
Baseball kind of works for me as well. Golf, I need the fans. Individual sports kind of need the fans. But more so on the late night circuit, what I'm talking about is when a guy, Kimmel, delivers a monologue from his house, you know, no gel in his hair. He's not wearing a suit. There's no fans to react. And it's just sad. Like, it's not funny. It's not entertaining at all. I can't watch it.
That's not what yesterday was. Bill Maher has been that. It has felt a note off. The John Oliver show has figured out how to do something that is very similar to what they do, but it took them a minute. Kimmel was in an antiseptic studio last night, and occasionally people would come out. And Kimmel's sense of humor is such, and I didn't watch enough of the Emmys to know whether what I'm saying is so or not, but Kimmel's sense of humor is to descend into the sewage and the muck when things go wrong. When things go wrong and are awkward, it's even better for what Jimmy Kimmel does because he doesn't get spooked by it. He doesn't get embarrassed by it. He sinks into it. And there were a lot of moments with the video during what it is that he was doing. And again, a totally antiseptic room,
right,
where occasionally a famous person would come out and greet him from a distance. But it was weird. It's another reminder when you're watching television that things in the country and the world are not any kind of sane or normal. Like, you couldn't help but watch that. One of the things about all those silly award shows that that makes them usually popular television viewing experiences is they're just big. They're big. You've got all these famous people in one place being big and famous and important and orchestras and everyone's all dressed up. And when everyone's from home, there's just no way. No matter, their television does not have the capacity to make it big. And yet, what have we said about the NFL and the Super Bowl? They do big well. Somehow the NFL continues to feel every bit as big with the televised viewing experience, even though you don't need fans at all. I've been just as surprised by that. I thought it was going to be a big impact, and there's next to no impact, like next to none. Basketball is a note off without the fans. Baseball feels a little sad when there's a walk-off homer and there's no one there. Even the Laker buzzer beater yesterday, even with the stakes, you realize there's no one there to celebrate that with them. So they're jumping on each other, but it's just 100 people and nobody else in the facility. The Emmys thing is stark, though. You can't help but notice, oh, wow, this is like somebody pinpricked a balloon on entertainment.
I think with football, what's working is you get field shots, so you really don't notice the fans. The masks the coach are wearing and some of the play, all the stuff that they're wearing, it's stuff they could wear anyway on a cold day, so it doesn't really look that much different. They pump in the decibel level in a way that I could hear it on my TV, where it almost sounds like a football game at times, and they time it pretty well. It's been super surprising, and the quality of football, though a bunch of guys got injured and everyone's talking about the lack of preseason games and training camp, the quality of football has been tremendous. You had two great games yesterday.
Who did you choose to watch, or what did you choose to watch last night? What was your choice from among all of the options on television?
I watched Sunday Night Football.
Okay, so do you know the number that I'm about to give you here in terms of how much of the offense Cam Newton was responsible for last night for the Patriots? Did they say it on the telecast? This is from NFL on CBS.
I mean, it had to be a lot, obviously.
Well, they had 464 yards. What do you think Cam accounted for? They had the Patriots had 464 yards
right
in week two against a good Seahawks defense.
I'm going to say like 280.
444. What? 444, 96%. And also, this is from Brian Nemhauser. This is what he says. I did not know this. Cam Newton has rushed from the opposing one-yard line 19 times in his career. He had never lost yardage before last night.
It was pretty predictable, that play call. I will tell you that.
He's the best goal line.
I mean, Brady is. Let's be honest.
You always know that he's going to run it from the goal line, and no one's ever able to stop it.
He's the greatest goal line threat in the history of the game. I saw a tweet that the last three times the Seahawks and Patriots have matched up, the game has ended at the one-yard line, and it's the team with the ball at the one that has always lost.
That's funny. That is funny. It was only because they had run that play a couple of times. It seemed like you knew that's what they were going to go to. Even Collinsworth said they haven't stopped it. You might as well run it.
You got to ride with that play call. I know a lot of people are criticizing it, but you go down with the greatest ever to do that. Outside of Tom Brady, as you mentioned, the greatest QB sweeper of all time.
Their fullback got blown up on that play.
Yes.
Like it wasn't Cam's fault there. Like, it was insane. Like, the defender just blew up that fullback.
Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in the game, isn't he?
Mahomes is pretty good.
Oh, Mahomes.
Man, I forgot.
You keep forgetting about that, MVP. Yeah. There's this guy.
Russell Wilson's not far behind, guys, behind at all.
That's fine, but just because you forgot him doesn't mean he's not behind.
Keep forgetting about that guy.
Who blew up the fullback? Was it Winovich? Because this guy is putting on some tape. I don't know if you saw what he did to Carlos Hyde in that game. Carlos Hyde, not a bad pass blocker. He's still in the league in part because he's a decent pass blocker. This Winovich guy, his body is transformed and he's just erasing dudes.
Let me ask you guys this question, because it's something I don't remember why it is that this, I thought about this yesterday, but during our time coming up in sports, Stugatz, the Walt Michaels time of coming up in football.
Yeah.
You know, the Mike Singletary at middle linebacker gave the torch over to Ray Lewis at middle linebacker. And, you know, in there somewhere, Brian Urlacher got a lot of fame because he was a middle linebacker. Is there a guy right now in the sport? Is there somebody in football that you associate with that position specifically where you're like, I know Bobby Wagner is a great linebacker by every metric, but I think. Is there a guy right now that you think of when I say middle linebacker, menacing, going to be all over the field, going to be somebody who's problematic? And if not, right, because I don't know if this has shifted. I didn't know the answer to my question. It was just a thought that came to me while watching the games where I'm like, is there a really famous, menacing middle linebacker who's considered a game changer? One of the things that happened in that game last night is Jamal Adams. Edelman had, with Cam Newton, Edelman had a career day somehow. Second game with Cam Newton, he had more yards than he ever had in a game with Tom Brady.
179 yards.
And Jamal Adams, some people are pointing out that he was, and I don't know how to do the measurements on this, okay? Because safety is a difficult position for me to measure as a, you know, a lay observer on this stuff. But somebody mentioned that Edelman was 6 for 6 whenever Jamal Adams was anywhere near him. And people were talking about also Jamal Adams being all over the field in that game in a way that made me conjure the idea of the middle linebacker who's always there for 20 tackles.
Well, I don't know if you noticed what happened to the safety lining up next to Jamal Adams. Diggs got ejected from that game. His replacement, Blair, got hurt. So I'm sure whoever was a third string safety lining up next to Jamal Adams caused all sorts of communication problems and positional problems lining up next to Jamal Adams, which in part probably contributed to how Edelman was doing, because they actually were doing all right against the pass, and then all the injuries and ejections started happening in that Seattle secondary, and now all of a sudden New England's having a lot of success throwing the ball.
Adams had 10 tackles and a sack, but Pete Carroll said afterwards, he said, I've never had a player who just will call a defensive play and he just does whatever the hell he wants to do. Like, he's not paying attention to me, he's paying attention to what's going on the field, trusting his film study and then going out and just out of position and just making incredible plays.
Okay, but my question to you is this, right? Because Troy Polamalu used to make Peyton Manning crazy that way because he would play football that way and you couldn't study it because Junior Seau used to do the same thing. But this is from Seth Walder, okay? And this is per NFL Next Gen Stats. You tell me what to do with this as I ask you as somebody who did not watch that game, does not know what happened in that game, and just reading about the game. You tell me whether Jamal Adams had a good game when I'm presenting you with this stat.
Okay.
When Jamal Adams has been the nearest defender to the targeted receiver, the Patriots are 6 for 6 for 157 yards. So is that communication stuff that you're talking about? Is that like, because I really don't know how to do the measurements with some of this stuff, Stugatz, and I don't think the audience does.
It's also a bad matchup having a safety. I don't care how good you are and athletic you are, and Adams is great on Julian Edelman. That's never going to be a good matchup.
You got to exploit that. And Jamal Adams has kind of been a confusing case study in terms of the analytics, specifically because he does so many things that are intangible related. Where he's in a position where he probably shouldn't be, and he ends up making a play. Teams have picked on Jamal Adams before, but I think contextually there's enough to support Jamal Adams because that was a messy situation in that Seattle secondary last night.
Dan, having watched that game, I would tell you just because he was all over the field, it would be nearly impossible. I understand the stat. I get it, but it'd be impossible for me to walk away thinking Adams played a bad game. Hey, guy's a menace. He's everywhere.
He looks the part, and postgame has to hurt Jets fans because he was so happy to finally beat the Patriots.
Is there a middle linebacker? And I know Jamal Adams. I know these are disparate thoughts, okay? Because I'm just talking about that feeling of a guy is everywhere.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I had to Google to see if I could come up with one, which sort of confirms your point anyways, because these are guys that should jump off the front of
your
mind.
Is that scheme related? Is that something that has to do with defenses and offenses have changed? Offenses are getting rid of the ball so damn fast.
I think what's changed is, and you pointed it out years ago, it's like getting a good D-line and be able to rush the quarterback with four. So now it's more about like Bosa's and Aaron Donald and interior defensive linemen. They're the big stars now.
And most, like the default NFL defense is now a nickel. Right, you have an additional corner on the field at all times because the way that offenses are lining up is different. So it also changes how the middle linebacker sort of plays.
Are we showing our ignorance, though? Is the audience listening to this and just rattling off a couple of middle linebacker names that we're not paying attention to because
I Googled it, man. Like Bobby Wagner is the most famous one because he's a 99 on Madden. And I mean, let Bobby Wagner walk into an arena anywhere and have people tell you, oh, man, it's Bobby Wagner. I don't know.
Pro Football Focus. Like, here are the best middle linebackers in the NFL. It's like Eric Kendricks, Darius Leonard, Corey Littleton, Lavonte David.
Lavonte David. Mike Ryan's beloved Lavonte David.
Good. You got Roquan Smith, Blake Martinez, Joseph Smith, Danny Trevathan, KJ Wright. You don't even know that I made up Joseph Smith.
I mean, these aren't Harry Carsons.
It was a couple of Smiths you threw at me there. I thought the Smiths were dominating the position.